Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM with co-host Voss Larikos. Voss, how are you doing?
Doing well, Ken. Always enjoy doing the show with you. We missed last week, obviously, with the Thursday night game that didn't quite go the Ravens' way, but hopefully they can get on the right side of the win column this week.
Yeah, it's not just 2 weeks off that's given us some extra topics to talk about today. It's a puzzling set of inactives that we're going to get to, multiple angles to kind of, look at the same problem here. But let's start with the Ravens had to clear some cap space before the game began, actually before they had some time, but I don't remember whether it was Tuesday or Thursday, they had to comply, and they made several moves.
Yes, three moves for a net reported net total of $9.3 million in space. The restructures were Nnamdi Madubuike, which is always a little curious when you restructure a freshly signed deal, but that probably shouldn't be too big of a factor long term. Justin Tucker, $4 million cap hit this year, will jump to $7 million over the next 2 years. And then Roquan Smith. Roquan, I have a little bit of trepidation. It's becoming a very backloaded deal at this point. $9.8 million hit in 24, jumps all the way to 23.8, then goes to 28.7. And then in the last year, 2027, when he's going to be 30 years old, it's 28.7 again, with still $9 million dead money there. So I hope you can sort out those issues you haven't covered this week, because you don't want to be on the hook for big money that way.
Right. I mean, it's not Deshaun Watson here, but it's a big deal. So you're always better off. There's always somebody worse off than the Ravens. But there's nothing. I cannot find one positive thing, by the way, to pull from Deshaun Watson's demeanor, his game, anything afterwards in terms of the press conference he did. It seems like one of the things he's really trying to make sure is that the Browns don't have any excuse to trigger a morals clause or a suspension. Yeah.
Well, the rumor is apparently the new issue that was filed this week may have the support of the Browns so that they can get out of that albatross of a contract, because there was now a new allegation that may not have been covered. Basically, they grandfathered in whatever happened before the trade, and then both the NFL and the Browns did, but anything that's revealed after the trade would be new information that could void it. So very unusual, difficult, ugly situation all the way around.
Okay. All right. Well, I certainly hope the Browns aren't able to get off the hook there. I hope it's right. Deeply in the flesh there. And there's,
yes. Okay. Yes.
All right. So we got the restructures give the Ravens a little bit of money, maybe enough to go out and sign a 1 year vet min deal with a pass rusher potentially. If the Van Noy injury, maybe we jump onto the Van Noy thing right away, because it's the seemingly serious injury that came out of week one, although it's been a long wait to see who might be hurt, and a Harbaugh's being quiet about it didn't make us feel any better about it.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's not a whole lot of options to promote to take his place. Adisa Isaac is still limited as of Thursday with a hamstring injury. And obviously, we know Malik Ham is on injury reserve. I guess the next man up would be Joe Evans, a practice squad player who I'm not quite sure is NFL caliber. I'm personally hoping he can play through it. And I, about 20 years ago, was in a fist fight and had suffered a broken orbital bone. And it was painful, but it wasn't debilitating. So that's my personal experience from that.
Okay. Did know someone at work who had a orbital bone broken as well. And it took a while for it to clear up. It seemed like that. And I've heard 4 week injury on this and whatnot, but this could be an IR trip, I suppose, depending on how tight the Ravens are for roster spots right now. This season is already looking a little bit like the Ravens are going to be hunting for dollars on the margin the way they did in 2021. I don't like that. I like the extended roster Ravens, who have lots of choices, plug and play, the closet's full of toys that they haven't played with in a while. That I like. The 2021 Ravens and what they had to do to squeeze under the cap with, they didn't carry 53 on the roster for every week of the season.
Sure. And a lot of those, you know, some of the money they had to spend there to fill in for injuries is still reverberating a few years later now. You know, it's all connected, interconnected. I don't know who on the market is available. I know it was picked pretty clean as far as outside linebackers, maybe more than it was the last few years. I saw Jonas Schaefer put out a predictions before the season. One of his predictions was the Ravens would trade for receiver at the deadline. But as these injuries mount, the availability or the ability to trade dwindles.
Yeah, they do have, I think, one decent trade ship. The position they would trade from, or positions perhaps, are safety and corner. And mm-hmm. It is possible that a player like JAD might have some trade value coming near the deadline. Well, you know, obviously, if they wanted to trade Wiggins, they'd have a ton of trade value. If they want to trade Brandon Stevens, he could have really significant trade value. The Ravens suddenly decide, you know what? We're not going to be able to sign Stevens. Let's go ahead and trade him right now. And Wiggins is our guy. We'll ride with him for the rest of the year. And we also need to see what TJ Tampa can do on a rotational basis.
Mm-hmm. That's an intriguing idea. Deal from strength. Maybe you deal from strength and bolster supplemental weakness where you're better off both currently and in the future, because I don't think they're going to be able to sign Brandon Stevens as we look at the future cap outlays. It's going to be very difficult. And yeah, that's pretty intriguing. Although I personally am starting to really like the idea of Marlon as the nickel and Hamilton as the dimebacker, and have both of those guys in a playmaking position at the same time.
Close to the line of scrimmage. Yeah, there's something to be said for that. If you feel the need to get Roquan Smith off the field, that could really work on third down. I personally think a lot of the problems with the inside linebacker coverage, other than Harrison being on the field, which I think is a liability, I think that the main two, it's probably overblown a little bit. I think, first of all, Simpson looked good, made some plays. And Roquan, I think it's a matter of Patrick Mahomes knowing exactly how to beat him. I don't think even other accurate quarterbacks, and Minshew's fairly accurate, won't be able to beat him the same way that Mahomes did, because he's you know, not got the same weapons, not got the same scheme, and not got a whole bunch of things are missing, even though the Raiders receiving core is pretty good.
Yeah, well, I'm certainly not willing to work. Promoting benching Roquan on third down at this point, or but Dime would have Hamilton as the safety, Jackson on the back end, Roquan still in there as the loop.
If you're gonna sit Simpson, see Simpson, I think has played well enough that I might move him to Mike on third down.
Okay,
sit. I mean, you don't even have to move him to Mike in a sense, because it's not important necessarily what side of the field you're playing on, but it would be, you know, maybe it's Hamilton you want on that side of the field anyway. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I could see that. And they have other guys who can play dime too, if they want to make Braid or Kane the guy. The Ravens have a history with this. I mean, Ray Lewis started as a two down player. He was replaced by Benny Thompson as a rookie on third down for quarter. So it's, you know, it's not unheard of. And I it wouldn't shock me, certainly, if by the end of Roquan's contract, he won't be ancient, but he'll be somewhat old for a linebacker. It would not surprise me if his role is limited from a every down player.
Yeah, agree there. Mm-hmm.
All right, so we got the restructures. We got the active roster for game one was one of the big surprises. And so we'll just go over the inactives, because the six that everybody knew were coming were Bo Braid, TJ, who's really kind of the last man on the roster, TJ Tampa, last cornerback, Adisa Isaac, who already had injury issues, Nick Samak, also coming out of that Packers game with an injury issue, Salah, who's, I don't know why he's not even on the team, but he's you know, sat in this particular case, and Devontaze Walker, because they really didn't have a place for him. Didn't have a way to get him on the field. It has not really been involved enough this summer, honestly, in the offense to be considered. So all those six, everybody had. The one that nobody had, the one that they couldn't figure out beforehand, I saw Jeff Zerbeck talking about this, and I was thinking about it. I'm like, I cannot figure out who's going to be. I would guess it's going to be Kane, but that would be another special teams hit. And then we get the notice, and it's Brent Urban.
Right. Yeah, I was shocked by that. I heard your show previously in the week with Coach, and I completely agree that going into a game with four active defensive linemen is just a recipe for disaster. Mm-hmm. And, you know, We'll get back to it, but I've been saying it for a long time. I think that John Harbaugh's Ravens sometimes overemphasize special teams. And we'll come back to that, but I got some snap counts and some other things we want to discuss there. And just the way the Kansas City just basically said, we don't care how many special teams aces you have, we're kicking it through the end zone, and what are you going to do about it?
Yeah. Oh, that's exactly true. And even the Ravens did kick the ball off and try to gain their advantage from it. And Kansas City had an average starting point of the 28.4 yard line, whereas Kansas City forced the Ravens into starting at the 30 yard line. Whatever advantages they got in slack on the margin personnel, and they still got to cover punts. So there is some overlap with that group, but still, I would think that, not taking injury risk.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
On those plays, might be something that's really significant that you would want to consider. And a lot of your backup linebackers, a lot of your ability the big concern for the Ravens would be that they go a player short at safety, and then they'd lose a safety, and then they wouldn't have the ability to move Hamilton wherever they wanted. That would be just a disaster that could happen on special teams. It's extremely frustrating to see this. And I have some stats on the total kickoffs in week one. Do we want to get into that now?
Sure. Yeah. I had that pulled up myself.
Okay. So 171 total kickoffs. That excludes one offsides kick that was made. 111 touchbacks were brought out to the 30. Okay. Now there were 57 returns. That's still only 168. And then, that's 168, right? And then three that were short or out of bounds. Okay. So I didn't see one where there was a bounce into the end zone. I know teams have been trying to do that. Some have been. You really want to skip it in the end zone because then the team gets at the 20 instead of the 30. I did not see an instance of that mentioned in this layout of the numbers. Did you hear anything on that?
No, I don't remember that, but I did see one that was short of the landing zone that was penalized.
Right. And that's just like kicking it out of bounds. It's at the 40-yard line, so it's a fairly significant penalty. And the average starting field position across the NFL was the 28-yard line. So it's not like the Ravens, maybe the Ravens think they're better than the average special teams team, and maybe they are. Maybe on a typical week they get it, they nail the other team at the 26.5 on average. But they got a holding penalty in this game. Mm-hmm. That was part of what contributed to the 28.4 that they got on five kickoffs, and yet it did not seem to be worth it from my perspective to deactivate Brent Urban.
Agreed. And just from the way I'm viewing it, and I don't think this includes Monday night, but just for rough numbers, 34% of kickoffs were returned in week one versus 20.5% last season. So, but that doesn't necessarily apply to the Ravens. Just like too high is in vogue in the league, that doesn't necessarily mean teams are going to play the Ravens with too high. It's everything's game specific. The Ravens are a unique team in some ways. And if I'm an opposing head coach, I'm saying the Ravens have a prolific special teams unit. I'm not kicking it to them. And, but it's four. So the way I see it, there was four special teams only players in this game: Chris Board, Holman, Kane, and Kelly. Then you had Harrison, Tavius, Robinson, and JAD were your core guys logging between 14 and 21 special team snaps. You had Harty, Kolar, and Wallace, all three logged more snaps on special teams than on offense. You had Wiggins and Ojabo also. At some point, diminishing returns. How many special teams aces do you need? Why can't Pat Ricard maybe take on some of that, get back to that? Is he so valuable that he can't? You know, I have a lot of questions.
I've got a crazy idea for you, because we're considering the player as Brent Urban, right? Mm-hmm. That is losing his spot to a special teams ace. Now, Brent Urban has probably played some special teams. We know he's a kick blocker. He's always been a big guy on the kick block unit. So first of all, you're giving up that. Okay, so it's not like you have an exclusively a special teams gain. You have an offsetting gain and a loss. So anyway, the second part is the nature of this. There's not a lot of running in kickoff coverage like there was before. So the speed element is reduced in value. What I think is probably of more value with the current kickoff is good two-gapping ability. There ain't no better two-gapper on the Baltimore Ravens than Brent Urban. There's nobody who can use leverage, length, do all those things to do that. I mean, you know, Michael Pierce or Travis Jones, maybe they're just that much ahead of him. I'm not even sure I would mind having one of those guys out there. I'm not even sure that would really hurt. But I mean, you got to run 10 yards and then you're making a tackle and you're shedding somebody. I mean, it almost is a little bit like rushing the passer in some ways. Because I don't get it. I really don't get it at all.
I agree. And that's it seems that some of the running back size and shape players are benefiting, and the shifty, quick twitch, Deontay Hardy type guys are not the prototypical return man necessarily anymore on kickoffs, at least. So, you know, I think if you look at who the Ravens signed, UFAs, you know, Derrick Henry was their big splash. Eddie Jackson was probably number two. And then you got Chris Board, Kadar Holman, and Deontay Hardy. And those are, you know, I think that's a lot to invest in special teams. And then you're using, you know, day three picks on special teams, exclusive players on top of it. I do think the team would benefit from pivoting away from that a little bit.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I really wonder if the NFL is getting what they want out of the rule anyway. So the rule could be changed again at the end of the year. It was a big deal all summer in terms of it was talked about. It was practiced more than any other special teams play. I mean, they were driving themselves nuts trying to figure out how to optimize their strategy on this play where it doesn't seem like tremendous optimization is possible. Now, we're going to give this a few more games just because the Ravens have already decided personnel wise, and we'll just, you know, react to how this occurs. But if the Ravens can't consistently finding some ways to skip the ball in the end zone, to force returns, maybe you get a turnover on the play because the other team has to return it. I don't see my attitude changing on it unless those things start to happen.
Yeah, you know, one big play that wins a game, and our tune certainly changes. And we've seen that before, and that was a hallmark of the early John Harbaugh, the early part of his tenure, where they literally won games on special teams with a return here or a field goal here and this and that. And it was a great advantage to have that in your back pocket to walk in with that mismatch every single week. But as the league has trended away from special teams, that advantage has been minimized. And perhaps, as we saw in week one, the dynamic kickoff may not have changed that equation.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, we are, I think we are where we are. I certainly hope they don't try and go with four defensive linemen again this year. I actually think it might've been a special for the Chiefs. And, you know, I still don't think it was the right move, because I can go into a casino, bet on black on the roulette wheel, win, and it doesn't make it the right bet. It still makes it a crappy bet. Okay.
That process.
Yeah. The Ravens, they held the Chiefs to 50 snaps, so they didn't get tired on the defensive line from that perspective. They didn't have anyone get significantly hurt that was on the defensive line. I'm not talking about outside linebacker. I'm talking about the defensive line specifically. So that wasn't an issue there. I'm not aware of an injury that happened on one of the kickoffs. So the extra risk they took there was that, I mean, it just, they happened to get through this without anything. Chiefs didn't run the ball effectively. That'd be another significant thing. You know, they didn't have the event pop up that caught them. But on the other hand, you know, I still don't like the risk management. I think a terrible risk management job.
Very well said. Playing with fire.
Yep. All right. Anything else we need to talk about? Did I miss anything on our agenda here?
No, Let me just circle back to Kyle Van Noy for a second. In case he can't go, I did like what we saw out of David Ojabo week one, and I do think Tavius Robinson could handle an increased workload. So in-house replacement potentially for week two. Hopefully it is a short-term injury.
Yeah, I think that's where the team will head. Now, last year they got a lot of value out of Harrison and Tavius Robinson playing early downs. I think we'll see a lot of that this week. They've really got to take the burden off Owe. Again, 50 snap game. They had a little more option to play him about what 90% of the snaps or something. He probably was out about 4 or 5 snaps only the whole game.
80, I think it was high 80s. Yeah,
high 80s is a percentage.
Yep.
Okay.
That's a Terrell Suggs, Matt Judon type number.
Yeah, can't do that to him. And if they want the most out of him as a pass rusher, they just got to keep him more fresh than that. Which, given what happened to Harrison in week one in terms of being in the wrong position a fair amount, what Simpson was able to accomplish in week one, even though his game wasn't perfect by any stretch, in terms of making a couple plays, I think the die is now cast as far as how we'll see it. I don't think we'll see Harrison at inside linebacker again, unless it's mop-up duty or an injury replacement.
I agree. I hope that's the case. Harrison did have some pretty good zone coverage ability early in his career. I think the added weight and potentially the gunshot injury sapped some of that. And Jack Gore did allude to Simpson being ramped up into more snaps at the podium. I believe it was either yesterday or today. So all the arrows are pointing in the right direction.
All right. Very good. Always great doing the show with you, Voss. Tell the folks where they can follow you online and talk to you if they want to.
My pleasure, Ken. I am on Twitter X at Vasilis Beatdown, Vasilis Beatdown. And I author a daily Ravens news article for Baltimore Beatdown blog.
All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, if you want to be on a film study short, hit me up. If you have questions for Friday Morning GM, hit us up at hashtag film study mailbag, and we will certainly get to them and try and answer them on the show. Probably have some guests coming up, and I'll talk to you about that in a minute, Voss, but on the show, but we're looking forward to that. And I hope you'll join us next week. For Voss Larikos, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye. We'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM.